12-Sided Stories is for mature audiences and often deals with topics that may be difficult for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
In the city of dreams, everyone wants to be a star, but at what cost? 12-Sided Stories presents Otherworld Hollywood.
Everyone, my name is Wes Otis. Welcome to Otherworld Hollywood episode number 13. And this is another one of our special episodes where we're going to be doing a little more of a deep dive into one particular character. And that character is played by the wonderful Sam. Sam, introduce yourself.
Hello, hello. Thank you. Hi, I'm Sam Starr. I use she, they, and the occasional fae pronouns. And I'm playing Imani DeVoe, who is the character we're getting to do a special deep dive into. So I'm really excited.
Enjoying the show? Then take a moment to join our Patreon. Support the podcast and get early access to episodes and bonus content. Head to 12-Sided Stories Patreon today.
All right. So the last time we got together, Robbie had basically tried to pull everybody together and say, look, hey, something weird is going on. We're all having these dreams that are kind of connected. I think that guy over there is suspect, the guy in the fedora at the studio. But during all of this chaotic mess, I would say Imani has had her own issues with Rose, their partner, who followed them out from Louisiana after killing her own husband and moving in with Imani and Trish. Trish has gone missing, and all of this stuff is happening at once and causing a lot of problems for Imani. At the end of the last episode, basically the police had shown up at the studio looking for Imani, and they, of course, hid her and was like, hey, look, she's not here. We don't know where she is. Then they said, okay, no problem. Imani went home and saw another police car out front. So she went home and found a police car outside of her apartment yet again. This is like the third time that this has happened, that there's been some kind of kerfluffle out front. And Rose was in an alleyway. They had an argument. Basically, Rose was like, fine, I'll do whatever you want me to do so that we can be together. And that's where we left it last time. That is actually exactly where we're going to pick it up.
Yikes.
You're in this alleyway. Rose looks at you and she says, okay, I understand and I won't mess things up for you any longer. But what are we going to do now? There's a cop over there. I mean, he's been there for a while.
You think he's looking for you, Shay?
I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't know why.
You wouldn't be out here hiding if you had nothing to hide.
I mean, they've already picked me up once. The police can do a lot of things for no reason at all. And she doesn't look you in the eye.
You sure you just came all the way out here to be with me? Or are you running from something?
No, I came for you.
There's got to be some type of insight check I can make. Has to be.
For right now, let's just do an idea check, which is just your intelligence.
Oh, ooh, perfect. Okay, that's a 27 under my 50.
You're like 98% sure she's done some shady shit.
Imani's gonna take a second. She's a great actor, but there's still this exasperated hint of an eye roll that crosses at that. And she like bites her lip because she knows this is either gonna go one of two ways. It's gonna backfire both ways, but is it a good backfire or bad backfire?
How big is the backfire?
Exactly. She will get really soft, mimicking how it used to be between the two of them and her body language. She's just like, Rose, you know you're my person. You can tell me anything.
She turns towards you kind of slowly and she gets kind of close and she goes, you know, we don't have to stay here. We can leave.
I mean, my job is here.
Yeah, but we can get jobs anywhere as long as it's just you and I. And she gets real close, puts her arms around your waist, and she's all like, baby, you're the only one I need. We can go anywhere.
Imani holds both sides of her wrists that are around her waist and like soothingly like rubs inside the wrist of it, but removes them from her hips. Darling, we're in public.
Oh, there's got to be a place we can go where we don't have to worry about that. And she takes a step back.
I don't think the time is right just yet. Maybe one day and we'll see.
All right. So right here, I'm going to do a flashback on you.
Cool.
You're in your kitchen back home in Louisiana. You're cooking and you're a decent cook. You're not like your mom or your grandmother who really spent all their time in the kitchen cooking for 9 kids and just like really cooking a lot. But you're a decent, like if you were in any other situation with a regular man, would be like, oh, wow, this is great. But unfortunately, he has stacked you up against his mother and nothing you do is going to be good. From the living room, you hear, I can smell what you're doing. You know that your gumbo was never as good as my mother's, so I don't know why you're trying again. He's got the radio on. You guys live in a small house in a little neighborhood. And when you look outside your window, you see your neighbor Rose. And she's got on this little sundress, and she's putting clothes out on the line. And that sun is just hitting her perfectly. You can just see the bronze of her skin shining. And it's like you're feet away from heaven in your mind. Are you listening to me?
Jump here. I'm so, my apologies. I was focusing on this room.
Oh, you were. And he's suddenly at the door.
It's like scraping the bottom of this big, massive, like, silver pot that's very well worn. Like, it looks like it's been passed down for quite some time, indented off over in the corner, and the lid doesn't even fit on it just right anymore. She has this big spoon and she's just trying to add butter and flour and like scraping the bottom of the pot.
You feel him come up behind you and put his arms around your waist.
She tenses.
He goes, you know, I wouldn't be so upset about all this if you did what you're supposed to be doing.
Jean-Pierre, I'm making dinner. What do you think? That's what I'm doing right now.
It's not making dinner. It's making kids.
I need some room.
Look, we've been married for a year and a half now. Isn't it about time for us to start a family?
I mean, I've been doing my part.
Oh, I see. Well, I know it's not me because, well, my family has tons of kids.
That don't mean it affects you. My family has tons of kids, too.
Uh-huh.
I'm 1 of 9.
Well, maybe we should try again, then. Practice makes perfect.
Now, do you want this crawfish to go bad or not?
I think it's already bad. You're scraping it off the side of the pan.
It's the rule. You're supposed to do it like that, Jean-Pierre.
Uh-huh. I'll be in there waiting for my masterpiece dinner that you're destroying in here. And he slaps you on the butt and walks out.
She goes over to this pot that's set off to the side of the stove. And inside is a whole chicken. And she just reaches in bare hands and pulls it out and like places it on the table and takes the pot full of the broth and just pours it into the roux. And she does this slamming everything she picks up and puts down just in pure frustration. Just,
my mom puts bay leaves in my gumbo.
Like, get the fuck out of here. The chicken is just sitting on like a plate next to the stove. She just needed to make the broth for the gumbo.
Okay. So you're doing all this and you stop for just a second and you look up and on top of the refrigerator in the back, your eye catches a box of rat poison and you just see it. Anything go through your mind?
It sits right there over the stove consistently, and every time she cooks, it's a reminder. Like, it's like, and I think it's consistent. She always is cooking, and her eyes will just randomly glance up at it, and it's like, I could make this so simple, so much easier for myself. But I think she never gets the courage to.
Right.
Like, she'll maybe, like, grab it at one point and get ready to. And maybe she did at one point, but then ended up throwing the entire pot away because she couldn't go through with it. It's not her. It's definitely crossed her mind, though. It's definitely crossed her mind.
That makes total sense. Suddenly you're back in present day, and just the thought of your husband wrapping his arms around you at the same time that Rose was wrapping her hands, and how long it has been since those two things happened. And she looks up at you and goes, what's wrong? You kind of drifted off there for a second.
I'm sorry. It has been such a long day, and I was really kind of looking forward to falling asleep in my own bed tonight, but...
Well, what are we going to do? Do we want to sneak in the back, or...
Amani knows that there's a back door, but it's kind of, like, hidden and secluded. You can, like, get in through the cellar door through the back, but it's chained and bolted up, and she has a key, but she does not want Rose to know that there is a back door. So she'll just be like, there is no back door.
Oh, okay. I thought there was. Okay.
Yep, there is only one entrance, unfortunately.
So what are we going to do? Should we, walk past him and see what happens?
I'd like to. You said you have nothing to hide, and I surely don't.
I just don't want to get arrested for nothing, you know what I mean?
I mean, why would they arrest you if you didn't do anything?
All right, we can do it, but you go first. I'm going to be right behind you.
Well, all right then.
And Amani will turn on her heel and stride right up to her front door and open the door.
She's right behind you, just a few feet, and you can tell that she's kind of covering up a little bit as she's going in. And the first thought through your mind is also like, oh, come on, if the dude's there waiting for, you know. And you get by the police officer, and he doesn't get out of the car. And you climb the steps, and you notice that your door is open just a little bit.
Rose, darling, wait right here.
Are you sure?
Shh.
And she'll, like, put her finger to her lips and point to the door being open.
She goes, maybe Trish is home.
Trish wouldn't leave the door open.
Okay, you know her better than I.
We're a house full of women living at home. We lock the door. Or at least I make sure the door's locked.
And Imani will try to Scooby-Doo tiptoe her way in.
Give me a stealth check.
Okay, cool. Flat 30, under 45.
Awesome. Okay. So you sneak up to the door, and you're able to kind of peer in through the crack. It's not open a lot, but you can see someone in the living room looking around.
Any descriptors?
They're in shadow because most of the lights are off, but you can make out that they're definitely wearing a uniform.
Like a police uniform?
Yes.
Excuse me, may I help you?
When you walk in, and I imagine flick on the light?
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
There's a man standing there, and he turns around and goes, you must be Amani, correct?
I am, and you might be.
He goes, I am Thomas Malone of the Hollywood Precinct. And he walks over. He goes, we're looking for your friend Rose. Rose is still in the hallway.
And what might that be for?
We have questions for her about her husband that she left in Louisiana and some other things that we need to speak to her personally about. You two are roommates?
She's a friend of mine visited, yes.
She mentioned her husband at all to you?
And Amani freezes just for a brief second, just briefly, because now she's stuck with the dilemma. Right?
Yeah.
Now she's stuck with a dilemma. Does she make her problems easier, or does she make her problems easier with a slight curve that could possibly turn into way harder than she ever needed it to be?
Plus, you're within earshot of Rose.
Exactly. Exactly.
If you unburden yourself with this right this second, will you really be unburdened? That's the question.
That's the question. That's the million-dollar question right there.
Holy shit. Who thought I would be making big decisions like this today, huh?
I did.
You bastard.
Mm-hmm.
thank God this is a podcast so I can actually fucking think about this. Yeah. Like, do I want to be a chaos demon and a goblin?
You have been that for pretty much the last 10 episodes with this, so.
Pretty accurate, you know?
Like, your home life and your studio life are completely different.
Oh, for sure. She kind of is an agent of terrible decisions. One gets her laid, one keeps her celibate for the next couple of weeks.
Maybe even days.
Right.
It's not like you don't work at a BDSM.
Exactly. And I know I'm not the only one who fancies vagine, so...
Yeah, we have a lot of vagine fancying.
Yeah, I'm like, I know I'm not the only one out here. There is way too much going on.
Another reason not to be hampered.
Actually, you know what? Instead, Amani looks at the cop and says, she is currently out right now. She said she was working at a little coffee shop downtown. She confided in me not to tell anyone, but she was running from someone. She didn't mention who that was not doing right by her. And she was scared, so I offered protection.
Okay. Do you remember the name of this coffee shop?
I insert name of coffee shop.
Oh, sure. Just the GM has to come up with names out of his ass, mm-hmm. I see.
Yep, that's your job. I'm just kidding. let me see. This is 19. So we'll just call it the Coffee Hut.
Coffee Hut. Okay.
Yeah. And it's like the Brown Derby, but small little bookshop, but coffee for coffee.
Okay, cool. It's where all the beatniks go.
Mm-hmm. Open 24/7, makes waffles and good coffee.
Okay. So he goes, all right, well, here's my card. If she shows up, we need to talk to her.
I will definitely pass this message along. Thank you.
Okay. And he starts to walk out. Now, I'm going to have you roll her stealth. So her stealth is 50.
Her stealth is 50. Okay. I wish I could show you the amazing roll I just made. And honestly, I'm a bit disappointed in myself. I should have fucked this.
What'd you get?
I should have fucked it. I got a 1.
Wow.
She's out of there.
Yeah, she slips away and he walks downstairs and I'm going to say like 15, 20 minutes goes by and she comes back upstairs and she goes, well, the cop car left.
You are not telling me everything, Rose Baptiste.
I did tell you everything. What do you think I'm not telling you?
Why are the police roaming around in my apartment?
So right here, we're going to do another flashback. It's maybe a month after the cooking incident, and it's during the day, so Jean-Pierre is out on the boat, and you're by yourself doing some stuff around the house, and there's a knock at the door. It's Rose. She's like, hey, neighbor, how are you?
Hey, how you doing, Cher?
I'm doing all right. I was wondering, do you have any sugar I can borrow?
Now, baby, you know I got loads of sugar. Give me 1 second. She's got a little extra sway in her walk as she walks back into the kitchen and comes up with like one of those tin camper mugs, like coffee mugs full of sugar, and then hands it over.
As you're coming out, she enters the house just at the door and she goes, actually, I was really kind of hoping to talk to you.
Well, of course.
She sits down on your couch next to you and she says, are you happy? I'm not happy in my relationship. And I was hoping maybe you could understand where I was coming from. Are you happy with the old man?
I mean, I love Jean-Pierre. We've been together since we were children.
Do you ever find yourself wanting something different?
Well, every day. I love my home, but I want more than what I think New Orleans could offer someone like me.
I feel the same way. I find myself daydreaming quite a bit about leaving here and finding...
someplace else.
Yeah, someplace else.
Where I can just be.
I always cared about Lafayette, but when we're together, it just doesn't seem right. And she places her hand on your knee and says, does that make sense?
Imani will, like, friendly clasp both of her hands around it from her knee and just kind of like hold them together in between her hands. Her hands are kind of clammy.
Okay.
Despite how humid it is. I mean, I've known Jean-Pierre since I was school age, and we've been together just as long. But there is just, lately, I think there's just only so many times I can hear about what my gumbo is missing in comparison to his mama's, and...
Oh, dear God, yes.
How my étouffée just completely does not compare. And if I hear one more thing about birthing babies that the Lord just don't see fit to give me right now. I mean, it ain't like I can make anything happen. I'm sorry. That's so rude.
That's not rude at all.
I shouldn't be.
No, that's why I came over here to talk to you, to see if maybe you were having some of the same experiences as I was. It's been difficult lately. I think that my biggest problem is definitely being always compared to their mothers. And I've been with Lafayette for a long time as well, and I will say that it has become tedious.
Tedious ain't even the word for it. I mean, if he wants his mama so bad, he can literally just stay home with him instead of working my goddamn nerve.
Yeah.
Sweating up my sheets, making everything smell like the bayou.
She goes, I feel like I am trapped and...
There's no way to get out.
Right. I sometimes have thoughts that are considered sinful, and I'm trying to deal with those.
Don't speak like that. Lord won't see you in the heaven.
Do you really think there is a heaven after all this we've seen here?
I don't know, but there's got to be something, because without nothing, I just don't see a point.
Yeah, and she looks you in the eye, and she says, thank you for the sugar and the talk. I should get back before Lafayette notice I'm gone.
You take care of yourself. And Imani will gently pat her knee as well.
All right, and she gets up and takes the can of sugar, and we come back to present day. She comes in, and you have had this conversation, and she goes, look, I have to tell you something else. Sometimes I get really angry, and especially when I can't get in touch with you, and I lose my temper, and I kind of black out a little bit, and I may have done something to Trish.
What did you do?
Well, she was in the living room, and she was just watching some television show, getting ready for work, and I know she's been looking at you, and I couldn't handle the thought of you with someone else, and the knife was right there on the...
Why wouldn't you just ask me? You know what? I shouldn't even be hearing this. And that makes me an accessory, and then...
Are you going to turn me in?
I didn't hear anything you just said. I'm erasing all of it. I don't want to hear anymore. I don't want to know anymore.
Right then, there are three solid knocks on the door. The police are back. Didn't sound like a cop knock.
I will peep through the little peephole.
It's Tony Stinelli.
Of course. This is the last person who I need right now.
Imani, are you home?
I will unlock the door, but keep the chain on the door and then crack it. Why are you here?
I think you know why I'm here. I need to talk to you and your friend.
Why don't you come back at business hours?
This is my business hours. Now, you have that chain there, but you know that's not going to keep me out. And you've met my cop friends who are downstairs. We need to talk. I'm guessing Rose is with you because we already checked out the coffee shop and she ain't there.
Well, then I don't know where she is.
Imani, I like you, but this is one of those forks in the road that you're going to have to travel on. Which way do you want this to go? You're not some country bumpkin. I know that. You know that she's done some pretty bad things, and we need to have a talk about it.
I just don't know what makes you think that I would even be able to trust you. You run with Belle and...
I run with Belle. Your roommate there killed her husband, ran off, and you know it. So before you start casting moral aspersions towards me, maybe you should think about what you're doing right now. Do you know that she's killed again? Two altogether since she's been here.
Oh, this has to be a dream. I'm just gonna wake up and I'll be asleep on the couch in my dressing room because I accidentally fell asleep after a long work night. And all of this is just me absolutely losing it. They say this is a city of dreams, but boy, it seems more like the city of hallucinations and weird people and...
It's not a dream. She killed your friend Trish and dumped her in the tar pits. We fished her out about 2 hours ago, and then she also killed Johnny.
Is she hearing all of this right behind me? Like, I'm surprised she's not jumped out of a window by now.
You don't know where she is. She's behind. You think she's behind you. You're by the door talking to him.
The torture just won't stop ending. It just won't end.
Do you say that out loud?
No.
Okay.
No.
Look, I got police all over this town. At some point, I'm going to nab her. And the longer that it takes and the more that you get in my way, the less friendly I'm going to become. And you want me as a friend in this city. I think you're going places, but not with her. So you have to make a decision right now. Ever read Mice and Men? Might be time to talk to Rose about the rabbits.
She told me she was at the coffee shop. I genuinely, at this point, don't know where she is. I seen her earlier, but not anymore.
And Amani is, like, looking at him, saying, like, we'll handle it. But, like, her eyes are saying, let me work this out. And I'll get it to you.
He goes, all right, we can talk about it later. If you see her, let me know. And he says it loud. And then he walks off. And you shut the door?
Yeah.
All right. She's not there when you turn around. And the window's open.
She's gonna ruin my career before it even gets started. I gotta figure something out.
And Amani's just gonna go get in the tub.
When you go into the bathroom, the shower curtain is pulled to cover up the tub. And so you pull it back and you find Johnny lying in a ton of ice. It looks like he's got several stab wounds.
What?
She didn't get rid of the body yet. And that's where we're going to end this episode.
Wes, what the fuck? Oh. Now I have to sit here and decide what the fuck I'm going to tell these people and whether or not I'm going to let everyone find out she's a goddamn bunny boiler, quite literally. Like, no, literally. Like, we were joking about it, but that's literally what she is. That's literally what she's doing. This is fucking terrifying.
So, thank you everybody for listening. Sam, tell everybody where they can find you.
Well, you can find me, Sam Starr, all across the internet, on the social webs, most social media, pretty much all social media that actually is worth some, and even that really terrible hell site that's about to implode in on itself. You can find me there at Lust for Life X, LustForLifeX. And you can find me there for all of the fun stuff that I work on consistently and the shit I talk. Hey, it's a good time.
Always a good time to hear Sam talk because she is awesome.
You're so sweet.
My name is Wes Otis. You can find me at Plate Mail Games on all the socials. You can also find the podcast at 12 Sided Stories, the number 12 Sided Stories, on all the different social media platforms, or find us at 12 Sided Stories spelled out, 12sidedstories.com. That's where all our links are. Join us on Discord, definitely, so you can talk with us and have conversations. And let's see, what else? If you want to help out the show, join our Patreon and become a supporting member, or give us a shout out on your favorite platform, or subscribe to us on your favorite platform, or any of those things are very helpful. We really appreciate it. And until next time, we will see you later. Bye.